Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Nate, we end Raw with an unadvertised but rumored appearance by Paul Heyman telling Cody to back off. And the theme of the show, including with Seth and Drew, was Cody's challenge to The Rock on Saturday at Elimination Chamber. Will Rock accept it Friday on SmackDown? What are the ramifications of that challenge? How might it be answered? When might a match take place, if it takes place? How does that affect Seth? How does it affect Drew? How does it affect Cody? How does it affect Roman? How does it affect The Rock? A lot of moving pieces in this final 40-day march to WrestleMania. Nate, I'll throw it to you. What, are you intrigued by this? Do you think this is a good kind of tie-in with what's going on Raw and continuing the Seth Cody, I don't know if alliance is the word, but just Seth promising to be by his side. What do you think of this story at this stage, with certainly more answers coming Friday?
I'm a big fan of what's going on here right now. There's so many, like you said, there's so many moving parts. There's so many different directions that they could potentially go. We're so used to WWE not being very linear with their storytelling. And it's, you know, within the last maybe 6 months, a year or so, probably under, you know, Triple H's watch, I guess, at least if I had to quantify it. We've gotten a lot of stories that have kind of started to weave together like this, and it's made Raw like less of a slog, that's for sure. In WWE in general, just a lot more enjoyable to watch. I feel like that's the case here with, you know, everything going on revolving around Cody. For the first time in forever, they have an organic babyface that the company is behind. It's not like Daniel Bryan where you know, everybody's behind him, all the fans are behind him, and the company just won't push him. The fans want Cody. The fans love Cody. And to kind of weave him into the stories with, you know, with Drew, with Seth, with the Bloodline, and kind of all of that, I think it's, not only is it smart to kind of capitalize on Cody's popularity, but it's certainly intriguing because there's so many different directions that Cody could go post WrestleMania, whether or not he finishes the story. I mean, even if Roman, defeats him at WrestleMania and goes on to be the champion, I think, you know, there's still quite a few different directions that they could go. And then, of course, you now throw this match, this, you know, potential match with The Rock into the mix. And that's not even something I had thought about, was Cody versus The Rock. Everybody was talking about, you know, it, myself included, Roman and The Rock. So now kind of the potential for a Rock and Cody match is, that's actually really intriguing to me.
Yeah, and I don't know if they're planning to put it on SmackDown to try to pop a huge rating to build interest in WrestleMania, because, you know, Seth is talking about we need to take out the Bloodline before WrestleMania and clear things. So it's just you and me, Drew, standing in the ring, and it's all about the World Heavyweight title. That doesn't sound like they're setting up the goal to be achieved, which is a Cody Rock match at WrestleMania. They're talking about trying to take care of them before Mania. And, yeah, of course, they're talking in vague terms. I mean, they're not going to take care of the Bloodline where to the point that Cody isn't taking on Roman for the title. But I guess the idea, you know, we're not supposed to think too hard about what does it mean? What if Cody pins The Rock? How does that stop the Bloodline from getting involved at WrestleMania and changing anything with Seth? So you can't think too hard about it unless the idea is, you know, take out The Rock so he just physically can't or psychologically or mentally just knows he shouldn't get involved because Seth and Cody have shown their strength. I don't know what the actual goal is, but again, I don't think we're supposed to think that hard about it. We're supposed to be rooting for Rock to say yes. Nate, where do you think it happens? Is it Cody Rock one-on-one? Does it end up being that match we've been thinking about since the kickoff so-called press conference in Vegas with Seth and Cody teaming against Roman and Rock? Is it on SmackDown? Is it somehow moved to the first night of WrestleMania? do we have any clearer picture on this? I mean, Greg Parks and Brendan LeClair were talking at length about this situation on the Elimination Chamber post show, available for everybody on the PW Torch Daily Cast feed. Search PW Torch on your podcast app, or find the link at pwtorch.com. And it's just everybody's talking about it, and they didn't have clear answers coming out of Chamber, and I don't have any clear answer now, other than they are building things right now around that. And also, by the way, advertising, and it came out earlier in the day with Rock's social media announcement, he's going to be on SmackDown 3 weeks in a row starting this Friday.
I mean, unless they do it at like night one of WrestleMania, I don't know where else they do it other than, I mean, because presumably SmackDown, considering that's The Rock's show and all of that. I just actually pulled up the list of pay-per-views to make sure I wasn't missing something between now and WrestleMania.
Yep.
Because, like, that happens every once in a while, you know, in NXT. Like, they do those Wednesday named shows. And Bruce likes to call them PLE lights. And so I'm thinking to myself, like, is there anything involved, anything that they could potentially kind of do there before WrestleMania? And nothing's coming to me other than – doing it if a Rock and Cody singles match is to take place, it would be SmackDown. Like you said, maybe to pop a rating or something along those lines. I wouldn't even be surprised if, and I don't know. I guess maybe I would be a little surprised. As I started saying it, I'm like, hey, I don't know. But what I was going to say was, if the match was about to start and then Solo Sikoa runs in and interferes with the Samoan Spike on Cody or something like that, and we don't actually see the match or something. But I feel like that would, I don't know how well received that would be, and that kind of went through my head as I started talking. But if we get some sort of I don't know where they've said it. I feel like they need to deliver on it. But now people are thinking about it. I can't imagine they back down from it. And where The Rock, where The Rock was, reportedly supposed to be wrestling at WrestleMania, now he's not actually wrestling. Maybe he's signed. I don't know if he has some sort of a contract deal where he has to wrestle a match or something like that. I have no idea, obviously, what those negotiations were, but that's a thought. So, SmackDown kind of sounds like what it is.
Yeah, and Todd Martin was talking about it on the VIP Elimination Chamber Roundtable with Rich Fan and Kelly Wells, that it just seems like Rock's going to be around for a while, wrestling more matches than just WrestleMania. This doesn't feel one and done. So there's a chance that, Cody challenges Rock, and Rock tries to basically says no or delays it with some excuse, and they are talking about it now, but what's going to happen is Rock is going to be the one challenging Cody at SummerSlam, and or sooner than that in Saudi Arabia or somewhere else. And so maybe that's where we're going, is they're trying to get you really excited about a Cody Rock match. They're not going to give it away on SmackDown. They're not going to put it on Mania. And it's going to be somewhere else. We just don't know. I mean, there's lots of questions. There's so many WrestleManias in the past when we got to the end of February, beginning of March, and it was just, okay, let's get to the show already. We know what's going to happen, and we don't know what's going to happen. There's a lot of possibilities here before Mania, at Mania, and after Mania with some major names in play. I want to talk for a moment before we move on to calls about the Drew Seth segment also, because that's part of this. Drew making his case that that he doesn't want a tainted win, which is pretty rich of him considering he interfered and, he's benefited, all kinds of hypocrisy that Cole is pointing out. Not exactly hypocrisy in the sense that he didn't orchestrate the Bloodline interference, but still, he seems there's enough there for fans to nod along with Cole and McAfee when they're like, ah, come on, you're not so pure. But that aside, Drew's telling Seth, I don't want you worried about the Bloodline. We've got this world title. He said he went, pee on SmackDown to put out a fire. SmackDown was on fire. He's like, let's focus on us, the title based on Raw. It's your title. Let's make it about us. And Seth's like, it's dangerous to get involved with the Bloodline, but sometimes you got to take chances and do what's important because, as I mentioned earlier, he said, let's clear the field. Let's clear the deck so it can be about us at WrestleMania, but if the Bloodline's still doing their thing, it won't be. I thought Drew, as usual lately, was great here, and I think Seth has been good playing off of him. I think having Drew and Seth talking about Cody and Rock and Roman and Heyman is making their match feel connected rather than sort of a secondary forgotten match going into Mania. But I just continue to enjoy Drew, and I thought Seth did a really good job making his case too tonight. So, Nate, what are your thoughts? Do you agree with that, and what do you think of that segment?
Actually, no, I do. I do agree with that. I think, you know, like you said, kind of Seth's match, especially once Cody picked Roman, whatever match Seth was going to have, kind of did feel a little secondary. And obviously, we didn't know who that opponent was going to be until Elimination Chamber. But I feel like you said, where they're kind of connecting it to the bloodline and that story, it's almost like, and I literally had this thought as you were talking, it almost seems to me like they're almost putting together like a Survivor Series type match where it might be like, you know, Cody, Seth, Drew, and maybe somebody else that teams up against the bloodline. So maybe even that match that Cody challenges him to turns into, you know, a 3-on-3 or 4-on-4 or something like that. I guess it would have to be I guess it could be 4-on-4. For some reason I wasn't counting Jimmy,
or Rock could say, the bloodline accepts your challenge, but you will take on Solo, or you will take on Jimmy, or you and Seth can take on Solo and Jimmy, albeit at ringside. Or Rock agrees to the match, but then somehow backs out. Or, you know, I mean, there's like you said, I don't think they're going to tease the match and not deliver it. They're going to deliver it to some degree. But
exactly. There
are different – Rock can negotiate what he wants his terms to be, and it might not be something that WWE is exactly forecasting at the moment.
No, exactly. So I like the fact that, you know, Seth right now is kind of in Cody's corner. It's cool to kind of see the two, you know, baby faces on Raw kind of working cohesively together. Like, you know, I think back to like, you know, when Stone Cold and The Rock were both big. Ooh, Corbin, Corbin's barking at something. You know, when like Stone Cold and The Rock, they're both the big baby faces on Raw. Or in WWE at the time. And
the unpredictability of the canine producer and helping you out here.
Exactly. But yeah, you know, like they obviously would, you know, kind of cross paths and things like that, but we didn't ever, I wouldn't say we didn't ever see them team up, because we definitely did, but a lot of times it just kind of felt like they were crossing paths, and WWE wanted to make them, whenever they did kind of, you know, either team up or, you know, building up to one of their WrestleMania matches, something like that, they wanted it to feel special. You know, right now I feel like it's kind of cool. I wouldn't say unique, but it's something we don't see super often, where the two, you know, two big top baby faces on one of the brands kind of are beamingly on the same page. That may change as time goes on, but at least right now they kind of seem like they're on the same page, and you know, they're focusing on bigger fish to fry, and that being the bloodline.
All right, let's pause. Let's introduce the show and give out the phone number and email, and then we'll get to our phone calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, February 26, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, including these post shows following Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and some collisions, and also the Wade Keller podcast, our Blue Logo show, including the weekly flagship. Tomorrow, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joins me, and we welcome your emails. If you are listening to this show live or on delay and you want to get in on contributing topics or questions for the flagship tomorrow, send those emails quickly to wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be recording early Tuesday afternoon. We'll have that show dropped on the Blue Feed on Tuesday, so be on the lookout for that. Search Wade Keller in your podcast app and subscribe to this, the Red Logo Show, and also our Blue Logo Show. Those will both pop up when you search Wade Keller. And while you're at it, subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast, the aforementioned show that included the roughly two-hour live Saturday morning edition of the Wrestling Night in America pay-per-view PLE post show with Greg Parks and Brandon LeClaire, an outside correspondent and callers. That is available right now, and I recommend you check it out. Search PW Torch and subscribe to that for free. Different show each day of the week with different themes, different hosts. And I think there'll be more than one show that will become destination listening, perhaps all of them when you sign up. But we're here to talk about Raw, and the other voice you hear on the show is Nate Lindberg. He is a veteran NXT analyst, both in written format and podcast format, on the aforementioned PW Torch Daily Cast on Tuesday nights. Nate, welcome. Good to have you here on the Raw Post Show.
All right. I've hit veteran status. That's great. But no, thank you.
The description just felt earned.
All right. I'm down with that. It's actually funny. I said to Kelly the other day on I might have been off air. I can't remember. But I'm like, can you believe you've been dealing with me for over 4 years? And he's like, there's no way.
It feels like Kelly's been complaining about you for at least six.
I know, right? It's insane.
Oh.
But if you'd like to hear Kelly complain about me PWT Talks NXT on the Daily Cast is where you can find me. Kelly Wells, Bruce Hazelwood, and I, we go live approximately 20 minutes after NXT goes off the air. Take your calls and emails, very similar format to this show, and we talk NXT. So call in, and maybe we'll be that show that on the Daily Cast that brings you back.
Very good. All right. So if you want to call us live, if you're live streaming this show, by the way, if you're not live streaming the show and you want to, you can find a link to the live stream in my TV reports at pwtorch.com. Just go to pwtorch.com, click on the Raw report, and you'll see the phone number and the link to the live stream. We go live about 5 minutes after Raw, Dynamite and SmackDown and Collision end. You can also find us at wadekellerpostshow.com. Just navigate to the live stream. You can also call in and just listen. And then if you want to participate, you push 1 after calling in. And that phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Again, when you call, push 1 if you want to be on the show. Ian in Tennessee is going to be up first, and then Sergio in Connecticut on deck. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll be monitoring the inbox as the show progresses. And bring those into the show also. I think that covers the bases we need to cover. So let's actually shift to our callers and see what they have to say. And certainly we have more to get to, including whatever's going on with Gunther and the IC title and Becky Lynch confronting Rhea Ripley and the Nia Jax attacking Becky, setting up a Becky-Nia Jax match next week and more developments. But first up is Ian. A veteran caller, I'll say. Ian, welcome to the show.
Right.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Good, good.
Hey, Wade, I tried to call you last week, but I don't know if my AT&T was down or if your AT&T was down. I don't know what happened. But,
Switchboard was down last week. So I was happy to see it was back up in time for the Elimination Chamber post show and tonight's Raw. But anyway, yeah, no, it was a problem with everyone, not just you.
Okay, good. So, but anyway, when I was watching Chamber, I wasn't too keen on McIntyre winning. I was really intrigued to see how it happened. But as you guys said earlier, I mean, Drew has just been on fire with his promos and his matches. I mean, I wasn't too keen on him winning because we've seen Drew and Seth before, but I think this time it's means a lot more than it did the last time they fought.
I don't think people are thinking about anything in the past. They are looking at this, and even McAfee and Cole were talking about it, how this seems like a different Drew. And the circumstances are such where, like, I mean, rematches matter. In the fact that people had matches in the past, you know, takes away some novelty. But the fact is Drew is just – whatever Drew has done in the past, this feels like a fresh, elevated Drew, kind of in the same way Cody feels elevated and fresh. But Drew especially, I mean, I'm sort of marveling at what a sort of reinvention without, like, this radical, like, reset. We've watched it happen in front of us. And he feels more credible, more main event, more top, in terms of being a top act, not lost in the mix. He has taken on a stature because of not only how he carries himself and what he's done, but some of his lines are so clever and diabolical, and he's entertaining in the way that he expresses himself now. I mean, the line about CM Punk, and it probably kills him that he's facing Seth at WrestleMania, and so he knows he's straight edge, so he drank twice as much for the both of them, and then he laughed. The even better was the line when he said, the doctor said, oh, you got a busted eardrum, you might not make WrestleMania. And Drew's like, who do you think I am, CM Punk? I'm not going to let any injury stop me from making Mania. I mean, he is not only making the Seth match feel important and himself feel important, but he's building up to what could be a SummerSlam main event or who knows when and where against Punk, and making that a bigger deal by keeping Punk in the conversation at the same time. Nate, talk about Drew. Elaborate on your thoughts on him a bit.
Yeah, no, I like actually the way you framed that quite a bit, because I think one of the biggest things for me right now is the things that he's saying. You know, not only are they funny and witty, but a lot of times, you know, he comes out with and I can't think of a good example off the top of my head, but he comes out with a zinger that has a bit of truth to it that, you know, sometimes might not be in the best light for the face or something like that. You know, we talk about all the time, they're the best heels, always kind of speak, they have a little bit of truth behind what they're talking about. And I feel like Drew's done that quite a bit over the past probably few months. But not, you know, and then again, with things that he said tonight about CM Punk, you know, specifically for the reasons that you mentioned, he's building to that match at CM Punk. CM Punk's not on TV, but, you know, he's keeping him relevant. Not that really anybody needs to keep CM Punk relevant, but you know what I mean? He's keeping, you know, that feud in people's minds, and it even probably lets CM Punk play off of it on social media. I don't think it's happened up to this point. Maybe it has, but it you know, certainly allows for that to happen too. But like you said, with the reinvention kind of Drew McIntyre, it has kind of been an organic thing, and it kind of reminds me a lot of Drew, like his time as Drew Galloway, both in the Indies, and then when he came back to NXT as Drew McIntyre, still kind of portraying the Drew Galloway character from the Indies and TNA and everything. And it was kind of a cool reinvention of, you know, of Drew McIntyre then, you know, coming from basically being part of three-man band and a bit of a, you know, a joke on the roster, going away, coming back. And then, you know, he had that. It was a drastic reinvention if you hadn't seen any of his stuff, you know, on the Indies or in TNA or anything like that. But now I feel like we, you know, over the past, I think it's been almost 6 years now, he's been back in WWE. We've seen a kind of a natural progression for that character. He stalled for a little while, especially as his run as champion. I feel like, you know, and granted it was during the COVID era, no fans and everything, but it was, you know, a lackluster run. But he kind of used that as fuel to, you know, at least in story anyway, use that kind of lackluster time to kind of fuel the fire and fan the flames for where he's gotten to now. And I agree, you know, he's kind of gotten to that main event stature. He looks great. He's in amazing shape. You know, I like the fact that he's growing a little more chest hair, that it kind of adds to the heel vibe. So overall, I'm really excited about where they go with Drew. I'm actually excited for a Drew Seth match at WrestleMania. And, you know, maybe 6-8 months ago, if we said that's, you know, that was kind of where we're going for the main event for Raw, I might have not been super pumped about that. But considering the progression that Drew's had, I'm really excited to see what happens. And I think Drew has the potential to dethrone Seth.
You know, I'll throw back to you for follow-up.
Yeah, but, you know, what Nate was saying was my main point of, you know, the whole, you know, when they were feuding, like what Seth said, like at Crown Jewel, I just didn't seem into the feud. But this time, you know, everything that Drew has said in his promos, when he went full heel, he hasn't been wrong. You know, he won the title in an empty, you know, or Seth said empty warehouse, you know, there was no fans there. You know, what Drew has said is just so accurate, but I was thinking about it, you know, Seth has to either lose the belt at Mania because he has to go out of surgery, I think that's what I remember. And but the problem is, do you think Drew wins and just keeps the belt and has the Drew Punk feud to SummerSlam, or does Drew come up short again and lose and have Priest cash in the briefcase?
Nate, what do you think?
Oof, you know, I hadn't really, I keep forgetting about Priest in the briefcase, because that's always a caveat that could go into anything, really. I guess my first impressions, like just my gut instinct for that, I kind of do feel like it might be time for Seth to lose the title. Not that he hasn't been a strong champion, and I've enjoyed his championship run, but I mean, it's been a little lengthy at this point. I could see them wanting to potentially switch it up. And I feel like a heel Drew would be awesome for that. And then CM Punk comes back. Let's say, you know, it is a SummerSlam match they're building to. Obviously we don't know exactly when, but we know it's going to be a pay-per-view main event, or at least a co-main event or something. But let's say it is SummerSlam. So Drew has the title, and with all of the, you know, all of the smack talk he's been doing, you know, to CM Punk, I think CM Punk comes, you know, could come back, and then and potentially even maybe take the title off of Drew. That would be, I don't know how in favor I am of that. I'm not a huge Punk supporter, but I understand his, you know, his place and his value to the company. So him winning a title, you know, the world title at like SummerSlam, big night like that, would be a feel good moment for a lot of people, I think. So I wouldn't be down on something like that for sure. But like I said, I'd have to think about it a little bit more. In terms of Priest, I don't know where he necessarily fits in. I mean, he's got to cash in at some point, but he's been so kind of removed from the main event scene, both, you know, with Roman and with, you know, Seth and Cody and everything, that it's hard to even just imagine where he would slot in. It almost feels like they're kind of, you know, wherever they would put it, it would be almost kind of like out of left field, or they'd have to frame it as like he's capitalizing on a moment, like when, you know, maybe right after Seth retains or Drew wins or something, and, you know, he's really down or something like that, at WrestleMania, Priest comes down and tries to cash in. As much as I love Damian Priest, I don't know if he's going to cash in and be successful. Considering the other options, I don't know if Priest is like the best option for a champion. Yeah.
Priest, I don't think is going to cash in and have any kind of lengthy title reign. And I thought they introduced a third option, so to speak, as opposed to just the two world titles, which is he stood opposite of Gunther tonight, and Gunther said, "Oh, you know, you're not here to cash in on me." I could see somebody beating Gunther at WrestleMania, and then Priest cashing in on that person who just ended a historic title reign, setting up Priest as an Intercontinental Champion with the cash in, and then that would. Perhaps, you know, depending on how the cash-in happened, they might even be able to devise it in a way that protects Gunther. I'm thinking through, you know, the different scenarios of how Money in the Banks are cashed in, and those scenarios, if they could use that briefcase to save Gunther from doing a clean job to anyone, whoever he ends up facing at Mania, maybe they're teasing a multi-person match or a tournament or something. So that option is out there too. But as far as whether it's going to be Drew or Seth or Punk, carrying the title for the most of the summer, post WrestleMania, I think those are three good options. I'm punting. I mean, you can have Drew win. I guess he'd be my choice. You know, he's healthy. You know, Seth isn't. He's just so impressive lately. But that doesn't mean that CM Punk doesn't come back and end the reign. If they, again, some of it is not just like, what do they want the outcome of the match to be? Some of it is, what are they setting up for next year's WrestleMania, or, you know, just later in the year? Who do they think they have more opponents for? There's just so many factors that go into it. But it's, you know, Seth's a good option, but Drew is better, and Punk is right there with Drew. I mean, I don't know if you want Punk lingering on the roster indefinitely without succeeding at a very top level. And that's
exactly.
Yeah. Ian, back to you. Follow-up thoughts from you.
Yeah, it's a tough situation because, you know, like you guys say, you don't think Priest is ready for a world title. I think he'd be a fairly entertaining Intercontinental Champion to have, you know, Judgment Day with him. But the protecting Gunther is probably their biggest concern. You don't want to have Gunther lose the belt to Priest cashing in. And, you know, as Wade said in the opener, you know, they're throwing a lot of options at Gunther. I don't know who could beat Gunther clean or, you know, have anything happen to beat Gunther and be like, oh, well, that makes sense. You know, Gable was my original option months ago when they had that feud. And Gable's just kind of lost steam, in my opinion.
Yeah, Gable is not. Yeah, he's not. He can be in the mix for whatever story they're telling now, but he's not somebody you want ending Gunther's reign at all. Anything you want to add to that, Nate?
Yeah, no, not really. I don't have anything to add, not much.
Ian, anything else you want to bring up?
I mean, unless, as Wade said, they make it a multi-man match, I don't know if they would go back to I think they did it 2 years in a row, like they did like the six-man Intercontinental ladder match back in like 2015, 2016. But my final point is Rhea, Becky, where do you see that going? I personally don't think Becky needs a belt anymore. I mean, they kind of buried Stratton with Becky beating her back in NXT. I mean, do you think Rhea retains that Mania? Do you think where do you think that's going?
Boy, I mean, right now it's interesting because you know the crowd is really wanting to cheer Rhea. They want to get to the point where they can just have permission to cheer her, and she's taking on heels. Becky, the fans are not. You know, Becky's had a story arc. She turned heel. You know, the idea was, well, as a heel, she can help put some other people over and elevate other people, and it'll be more fun for her. And there was obviously a pushback against that. She hasn't really regained her momentum since then. I think it was Brandon talking about that. Maybe it was Kelly. But anyway, I was listening to all the shows this weekend on Elimination Chamber on the Torch side of things. And then you have the issue of her just going away and then coming back and talking about being a mom and talking about being married to Seth. And sometimes that changes the fan base's perception of somebody where, oh, they're at a different place in their life, and I look at them differently now, and I want to get behind somebody new and exciting and novel. And Becky's fighting that, and she's hasn't like done anything wrong in terms of match quality or saying wrong things. This isn't like a Cody and AEW type thing where you can just see him just, you know, stepping on himself over and over with some bad judgment. That really hasn't been the case. So do you want to have Becky beat Rhea and have the fans be upset with her? Do you give Rhea a strong win and then tell a different story with Becky who's fighting from underneath? Nate, what do you think? What are the options?
Honestly, I think that's the best way to go because for a lot of the reasons that you outlined. I mean, and tonight it was pretty obvious. You know, it really stood out to me the reaction that Becky got opposite Rhea. It wasn't the man type of a reaction as we had once heard. So I think kind of like I'm obviously playing armchair booker here, but, you know, if it was me, like I would probably have Rhea stayed dominant, go over, Becky, probably have, you know, Becky put on, you know, an amazing fight and, you know, Rhea still has, I'd say probably wins dominantly, but you know, at the very end is where the dominance kind of comes out. So Becky still looks strong, and then kind of tell a different story with Becky, maybe a redemption story. Maybe you put her on SmackDown, although I don't know how that would work with, you know, her and Seth and the baby and all of that. But, you know, at least business wise, maybe you put her on SmackDown and then she's, you know, feuding with whoever the women's champion is over there. But I think that would be more well received from the fans because, yeah, right now, I mean, everybody wants to get behind Rhea. I mean, you know, and I think I've said it before on this show. Rhea, I mean, she's broken into the mainstream. You know, I see memes about her everywhere and not in just wrestling places. She shows up in like my Facebook feed and on Reddit and places where I don't expect to see her. So I think keeping her dominant right now, that's what people want to see, unless you've drastically changed course with Becky and like she beats Rhea and becomes a heel and turns on the fans. And I mean, it's a real, real drastic change from the last time she turned heel. I just don't see that story playing out nearly as well as keeping Rhea a dominant champion and kind of continuing to ride the Rhea Ripley wave. And then kind of telling, you know, perhaps like a redemption type story. It kind of almost akin to what Cody's been going through the last 2 years, but probably a little bit more condensed for Becky.
All right, Ian, any quick closing words for you before we move on to other callers?
No, I mean, you know, Raw really has been you can't miss it or something big will happen when you miss it. But I will let you guys get to other callers. It's always great talking to you guys.
Always great hearing from you, Ian. Thanks.
Likewise.
All right, our number is 347-215-8558. Give us a call if you're live streaming the show and push 1 if you want to be part of the conversation tonight. We'll go to Sergio in Connecticut next, and then Steve in Cleveland is up after that. Sergio, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What is on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. Hopefully you guys enjoyed Raw. I did the parts that I saw parts of it. But the thing I want to talk about is the Seth and Drew promo and how much I loved it. I know you guys touched on it. But
yeah.
I wanted to go a little more in depth on Seth part of it. Because Drew is doing a great job, but Seth, I feel like I haven't been able to get invested in Seth in a while. I can't even tell you how long because of, like, he just seems so inauthentic, like the laugh and the clothes and the over-the-top personality. It just seems like such a put-on, and I feel like a lot of his popularity comes because, you know, he's a good wrestler, he's a legacy star at this point, and his song is really, really over, so fans like to chant the song. But with this whole Rock, Roman, Cody, Seth thing, I feel like it's really like lighting a fire under Seth, and for the first time making me interested in Seth in a while. And I know that sounds funny because, like, at the press conference, for example, I remember everybody was saying, like, oh, why was Seth even there? He was buried. His title didn't seem like nothing. He was just off to the side. And he was off to the side for most of it. But when The Rock slapped Cody and everybody held Cody back, Seth was the one that got into The Rock's face. And he was yelling at The Rock, and they were swearing back and forth at each other. And it was really intense. And it was like, oh, look at that intensity by Seth. Like, that, I'm glad that he was there and he didn't just let the bloodline just roll over the press conference, because Seth doesn't like the press conference. I mean, Seth doesn't like the bloodline because he talks about it all the time. But I really just like that it feels like he has something that he's invested in. It feels like taking down the bloodline really does mean everything to him. And that's the first authentic thing. I feel like, I don't know, it just makes Seth just way more interesting to me. And I just wonder if you guys agree with that, if you feel like this is the first thing in a while Seth has really had to, like, sink his teeth into.
One of the things I like about a wrestler is when they make other wrestlers they're working with feel more interesting, more relevant. And Drew is doing that for Seth. And there's a lot going on. I mean, Seth is interacting with Cody, too, and the bloodline. It's a lot of things going on. But having the CM Punk situation really derail what Seth's idea of a big match at WrestleMania could be, and, you know, being willing to put aside his legit concerns about Punk historically and see this as a chance to have a really big match that would be compete with Reigns versus Cody as the biggest match at Mania, and have that taken away, but then to end up in this situation, I'm sure he'd probably rather be talking, you know, doing whatever he had planned with Punk, you know, with a mix of meta stuff and backstage stuff and all that. But standing there with Drew tonight, Nate, I was more interested in what Seth had to say, and I liked the idea of, hey, sometimes you take chances in order to achieve a goal, and I'm willing to take that chance. And he said it in a believable way that didn't feel, ha-ha, you know, all in character. And so, yeah, I'm with Sergio. I think he's a more interesting person right now. What do you think?
100%. I've gone on record, I think, either probably on this show, and saying, you know, I like Seth Rollins, but in this character, this iteration of Seth Rollins, my biggest thing with him is like, what crazy outfit is he going to be wearing? And that's kind of like, it's kind of it, you know, for a lot of the reasons Sergio outlined is like, you know, a lot of things just seem over the top. They don't seem like they're, you know, super authentic. The laugh, especially, like I don't know how that got over. It to me, it drives me nuts. So I'm kind of in a very similar boat. Like I like Seth Rollins, you know, the wrestler and, you know, his body of work and you know, Colby Lopez, the person, but, this particular incarnation of him has been, so maybe that's also kind of part of the reason I feel like, you know, probably I'm in the minority. I'm sure that, you know, his run has almost been a little lackluster to me because I'm not necessarily behind him. But that said, past few weeks, even kind of even the going back to the press conference in Las Vegas, I feel like he has had a bit more intensity behind him, a little bit more authenticity behind him in wanting to take out the bloodline, very similar to, you know, with Cody, you know, and kind of how we ended the show tonight. It's made me more invested in Seth than I have been in quite some time, probably before the whole Messiah thing. So, I think both he and Drew are doing a damn good job, you know, not only telling the story, but, you know, like Wade said, Drew's doing a great job, but also elevating, you know, the person opposite him in the ring here, that being Seth. So, thumbs up for me.
All right, Sergio, back to you.
I'm glad you guys agree, because I know I've heard you from you guys, both you guys before, saying like Seth's over the top parts of his character isn't your favorite thing in the world. But I know you guys gave Drew his flowers already today, but I got to throw a few flowers too, because man, Drew is just like, he's just clicking on all cylinders right now. It's insane. Like, I love how nuanced his character is. I love that he's not like, he like you said, we've seen the progression. So he's not like this over the top, sadistic heel just doing bad things just because for bad things sake. He seems like a guy who's singularly obsessed with getting his moment at WrestleMania in front of a crowd, and he's willing to do almost anything to get to it. And I just think he's bringing the best out of Seth, really. But like, he's just been I can't speak highly enough about Drew, but you guys already talked about Drew, and I just wanted to pivot over to Cody real quick. And Cody, I've been saying this for a while, because like at the press conference too, I told my cousin, because my cousin is the only wrestling fan I know. He said, I said, man, it's so funny. You got The Rock and Roman Reigns standing there, and they look so cool. And like, they're just jacked. And Roman Reigns is like what I would like to look like as a human being. And The Rock looks like he was made in a factory. And then you got Cody there, who's just kind of like the skinny guy in a suit with a lame neck tattoo and the bleach blonde hair. But Cody, I'm behind Cody. I've been behind Cody since for such a long time for him finishing the story. And I think it's just because I connect to him. I feel like I connect to his story. I feel like I connect to that he wants to be the world champion. Like, it feels like, I know some people knock that about Cody and like, oh, he only wants to be the world champion. He only wants to be the world champion. But isn't that what you're supposed to want? You're supposed to want to be the world champion. And Roman is the guy. And Cody wants to take him down because he was wrong, you know? It's not like he lost clean last year. He was wrong, and he never forgot about it. That always bothered me about Roman's other challengers, that they get cheated out the title, and then they just kind of let it go, you know? And I know it's because they're booked that way, but I like that Cody has been always bringing up Roman, always bringing up, like, hey, I still have this other thing that, you know, I might be facing Brock, I might be facing Nakamura, but I still have this bigger goal. I want to get back there, and that he's getting there. And I was wondering, if when's the last time you guys ever remember, because I was trying to think, and I couldn't think of one. Cody feels like a legit main eventer. Cody feels like somebody who you can build a show around. Cody feels like you can put him at the marquee of a house show, and he'll draw, he gets the reaction. And Cody's never been a world champ. Cody's never held the WWE world title, AEW title. He's just never been a world champion. when's the last time you guys remember somebody on the rise getting over to such a degree and feels like a main eventer without even winning the world title yet?
Yeah, I don't even know. But he has, and part of it is delaying the gratification. That's what's part of what's made him feel like a big star. Not that it couldn't work the other way, and there's not risk in either direction that you go. But the chase and the denial is part of him working. Go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, I mean, I like off the top of my head, I can't think of anybody that's had kind of a run like Cody has in his return to WWE. You know. He's done a great job, obviously, and you know, with you know, telling the story and getting the fans behind him and all of that. But you know, in terms of like who else would have been there or had like a similar rise, it's kind of hard. It's hard to think of it offhand. But it, you know, as I said earlier, you know, I think to start the show. You know, WWE has this authentic, organic babyface right now, which is what they always want. They always want that guy, you know, whether it was John Cena, Roman Reigns, Stone Cold, Hulk Hogan. They always want that guy they can build around. And right now, they have plenty of guys that they can build around. But Cody is unique in the fact that the fans – are so behind him. And I think, you know, to Sergio's point, I think that they do relate to him. You know, partly I think it's, you know, being Dusty's kid is part of it, but, you know, kind of, especially for longtime fans, you know, watching him as Stardust was, you know, I thought Stardust was kind of entertaining at some points.
Yeah.
I'll completely admit, but, you
it was
know,
a guilty
watching,
pleasure a little bit.
Yeah, it was. I even had his music as my ringtone for a while. I'll throw that out there. But yeah, you know, watching him go from this mid-carder Stardust, it was kind of just a lame knockoff of Goldust, and then say, so, you know what, screw this. I left, took his chances, went off, did his thing. AEW, we all know the story. It's really cool. It's really relatable. You know, we kind of all. Like even with all his success, I still think of Cody as blue collar, and I don't know if that's because I associate Dusty as blue collar, but in my head that's what I think of, and that is a lot more relatable than, you know, somebody like The Rock going out in the $500 shirts and things like that, and you know, talking down to the crowd. So I think for the first time in a long, long, long time, they have that one baby face that's organic. People like him. And if they keep telling the right story, I think they could build around him for quite some time.
All right. Sergio, back to you.
Yeah. I just feel like Cody connects, man. Like Cody has always kind of been, one of my guys. Like funny story, the second wrestling show I ever went to live, I had a dashing Cody Rhodes sign, and you can see me in the background at one point. Cody Rhodes is on the ropes, and you just see me holding up a dashing Cody Rhodes sign. Like, I still look up that YouTube clip every once in a while, just be like, hey, there's Cody, and he's kind of looking in my direction, like 12 years ago or however long.
That's awesome.
That was.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wanted the last question. I was wondering if I could just kind of do a quick little pivot to an NXT main roster question, if that's okay with Nate up here.
Oh,
yeah.
I gotcha. Let's do it.
Now, I think it's pretty evident that Carmella Hayes is not long for NXT anymore. To me, it seems like this is like his last run. Like he finally turned on Trick, and you know he's gonna try to get the world title. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe Trick interferes, but obviously this is the rubber's gonna meet the road in a match between Carmella Hayes and Trick Williams, hopefully one-on-one. And I mean, I like the triple threat idea, but hopefully one-on-one, because you know those guys deserve a one-on-one match to end their feud. But I was wondering, like, with Trick Williams, when he came up the other a few months ago a month ago, however long it was, to help Carmelo Hayes when he was getting attacked, and the fans reacted really, really strongly to him. I remember there was reports that it caught people off guard backstage in WWE. and I remember the whole crowd was chanting "Whoop that trick" and stuff like that. I was wondering if you guys see a scenario where Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams have their match, their blow-off match in NXT, and Carmelo Hayes, like, cheats Trick Williams out of the win, like he cheats, low blow, whatever, holds the rope, whatever. Carmelo Hayes says, "That's it, I'm done, it's over. I beat Trick." He goes up to, like, let's say SmackDown, for example, like, and he said, "I'm done with Trick Williams, I'm done with NXT, it's over." And he thinks he's gone, but and then, like, maybe, like, Nick Aldis, whichever one he signs for, Nick Aldis or the Raw general manager, whose name is Adam Pearce, comes out and says, "All right, Carmelo, we're signing you, but your first opponent is Raw or SmackDown's other new signing," and Trick Williams comes out. Do you guys think that's any kind of possibility that, number one, a feud that's really just been featured on NXT, except for a couple of snippets here and there, can carry to the main roster like that? And do you think that's even a thing, or should Trick just stay down in NXT and keep seasoning, maybe get a title run and the whole nine?
So I like that idea. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely like that idea. Like, I was actually almost kind of getting some goosebumps there going, "Oh, that'd be so cool." Like, Trick, Mello thinks he's done with Trick, and then Trick's like, no, I'm here too. But I think the more realistic scenario is, and I think we are going to be getting Trick versus Mello at Stand and Deliver, potentially for the NX title, because Mello is looks like he's going to be challenging Ilya Dragunov for the NXT title. I could potentially see him winning it and then dropping it to Trick at Stand and Deliver as kind of his swan song, and then quietly going up to the main roster. I don't think it's time for Trick to go to the main roster yet. Not that I don't think he's ready. I think you could pluck Trick right out of NXT, put him on the main roster, and I think he'd fit in and he'd have no issue. But right now, Trick is red hot down in NXT. You know, everybody, like you said, chanting "Whoop that Trick" and whatnot. I think right now it would behoove him to be an NXT champion. He only held the North American title for like 3 days, 4 days, something like that. So to actually have a meaningful run with the title as kind of a top guy down there and build him up to the level that Carmelo Hayes is at, because Carmelo Hayes is up there. Trick's just a notch below him. And I think Trick has the, I think Trick could potentially reach kind of a similar level, as Mello. So I think you kind of build him up over the next year in NXT and then bring him up and then potentially revisit the feud with Trick and Mello. That's kind of the scenario that we've been talking about on PWT Talks NXT for the past few weeks. But I'm pretty confident at this point we're going to be getting our singles Trick versus Mello at Stand and Deliver. I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Cool. Sergio, you happy? So NXT talk. Although it's soon to be main roster talk. It already is in a way. So
yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. I'm happy because quick personal story and I'll let you guys go. I met Trick Williams on my honeymoon. He was at the hotel I was staying at with my wife, and I walked by him and I was like, "Whoa, was that Trick Williams?" And then like a few minutes later I walked by him again and it was, and we are face-to-face, because I'm a pretty tall guy. He's about 6'3", 6'4", but I'm 6'7". So we are face-to-face, and we made eye contact. And I said, "Hey, you're Trick Williams." This was like 2 days after he lost the North American title back to Dom. And, man, he was like one of the coolest guys I've ever met. He stopped for a second. He gave me like a 2-3-minute conversation, asked what I was doing there, asked about my honeymoon and stuff like that. And then we went our way with a picture. He was like one of the coolest dudes ever. So I'm rooting for Trick Williams, not only because, you know, he's a great character and he's over it, but also personal reasons. And so, yeah, I'll leave you guys with that and have a good night. Thanks for taking my call.
Excellent. Thanks, Sergio. All right. Our number 347-215-8558. If you call, push 1. We'll go to Steve in Cleveland next. Steve, thanks for holding. It's been a while. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Doing
well. About Raw. Yep.
Before one quick thing, I have kind of a big picture question. I don't know if I should just say that up front or just wait till after a couple of raw bullet points. What do you guys prefer?
Whatever. You take the lead. We'll
okay.
be good either
Let
way.
Me just here's the big thanks. Here's the big picture question, so I don't forget. You get to a certain age, you know, I didn't just go to my first wrestling match 12 years ago. So when they signed, WWE signed the big contract with Fox, billions of dollars, and SmackDown kind of became basically the showcase network show. And I'm not saying all your biggest stars like Roman Reigns ended up there, but it seemed like a lot of the resources tended to, in my opinion, lean towards there, and sometimes Raw kind of get left with the spoilings, okay? Do you think that as it's now going to be moving pretty soon over to USA, an arguably less prestigious spot, and you've gotten billions of dollars from Netflix, from Raw, for Raw, do you think that will shift back to Raw being more of the flagship at that point?
I think so. I've talked about how I think there's a possibility that they just combine the rosters and get rid of the whole separate brand thing. Even though they're doing it as well as they ever have, but having separate GMs kind of competing to sign talent, it seems like they're more invested in it. They have two world titles, which, you know, they could merge if they wanted to. But there's going to be a lot of people who have cable who don't have Netflix, and people who have Netflix who don't have cable. And so if you only have Cody most of the year on one show and only Roman on another show and Drew only on one show and Rhea Ripley only on one show and on, I mean, you could be excluding a big part of your audience from seeing them. It's one thing when you're on Fox and USA, the top cable network or, you know, one of them and a broadcast network. Now it's going to be different. So it's hard. We don't know how long Raw is going to be. There's a number of unanswered questions. We know USA Network is a good home for SmackDown, but it's not Fox. And Netflix and USA seem equal in terms of prestige, where Fox was clearly a step above USA in terms of its availability and prestige. However, USA is on the downturn. They're going to have fewer people watching unless things change dramatically in terms of them becoming more streamable and if the cord cutters subside. But Netflix is, you know, growing. I mean, streaming services are growing and cable is not. So they have some tough choices to make. My short answer to your question, Steve, is I think they're just going to end up being equal. I don't think we're going to be able to tell until we're not going to get the ratings like we typically did. You know, Nielsen will have certain ways of tracking things. So, and they're trying to advance, but it's going to be different in terms of tracking, you know, how many people are watching Raw versus what we've had with cable ratings for decades and broadcast ratings. So that'll be interesting. But unless there's a real big difference in who they're reaching, I don't think there'll be a dominant show. Netflix will reach a typically on average younger audience because streamers tend to be younger, and people who are have cable and don't stream or, you know, are sticking to cable tend to be older. So WWE might just program in that way. And I don't know how that manifests in terms of the on-air product, but that's something that's a little different than broadcast and Fox versus USA. Nate, have you given thought to that? Do you have theories? Do you have a preference? Do you think that WWE should go a certain direction, make Netflix a dominant show, or stick with the old reliable USA and make sure that doesn't feel like it's a secondary show?
It's going to be weird to see SmackDown on USA. That's weird. But, I haven't really given it a whole heck of a lot of thought, to be honest. But my gut instinct was kind of similar to what you had outlined. You a lot more eloquently and with some data to back it up. But, you know, I kind of feel like it would make sense to keep USA kind of the more dominant show. But at the same time, I don't know. Like, there's also part of me that's saying, like, that kind of feels like it might be, like you were saying, kind of try to keep them equal. I'm not a big proponent of them blending the rosters again. I don't mind them doing what they're doing now, and kind of there's some crossover between the rosters and things. I think they're telling stories, compelling stories, and they're still able to give plenty of people time on TV because you know that's kind of one of the things that, that happens when you start to blend the rosters. You know, people on the you know kind of the lower down the card don't have as much TV time. And I mean, they have a massive roster right now. We've got a big roster down in NXT. You know, that winds up getting called up. So I would personally like to see them stick with separate rosters. I don't know. I think if I had to choose, I think I'm going to say that they're probably going to wind up keeping the shows like somewhat equal. We may feel like one show over the other gets a little preferential treatment here and there, but I think that kind of makes I think that probably makes the most sense.
Steve, back to you.
Okay, didn't want to blurb in for once. I do have to say this about tonight's show, a couple things real briefly. First of all, man, this was a physical episode. I mean, you saw Vince with his back cut, bleeding from his back, of course, while he's eating the pin, as per usual. Then you see Sammy full of welts. He wasn't really talking. He was just getting kind of smirked at by Gunther. And I just kind of liked the way they were going with some of the match work. You know, speaking of Gunther's situation, I've already outlined previously how I'm kind of a Gunther mark, but I'm hoping men, that they don't go to this fatal four-way or three-way, but I really see that's kind of where they're going to go for this IC title, and I hope he doesn't lose his strap that way, even though I know it can sometimes be a way to keep him strong, but, you know, they stuck Gable in the middle, who has zero shot. They put Sammy in there. And then you had the Judgment Day come up there. And now you're going to put Priest there, maybe, maybe not. Frankly, I thought it was very cool that they were almost maybe implying a little bit two things. One, you don't have to cast, you know, the Money in the Bank is for any title. It doesn't have to be necessarily a, quote, world title. Number two, you ask me, I wouldn't mind seeing a match where you're playing for all the gold. You know, okay, here we are. We're Imperium. We're going to give up the IC, and you're going to put up the, and whoever wins this match, you know, they're going to take it all. And I just hope it's not a fatal four-way, because to me that just gets to be a bit cheesy.
Nate, you want to comment on that?
I'm with you where I hope it's not a fatal four-way or even a triple threat. I'm not a huge proponent of multi-man matches in every scenario. It depends, I guess. But I feel like for whenever Gunther does lose the title, it should be in a singles match. Not that I think he's necessarily going to lose it at WrestleMania. As far as I'm concerned, Gunther can hold the title till the day he retires.
Solo.
Yeah, I could definitely see Solo, dethroning him at some point. Considering the way he's been built up and kind of positioned. Damian Priest does also kind of seem like a credible person to me as well. I mean, like you said, you know, and I think Wade had mentioned it earlier in the night. You know, I mean, he could potentially cash in Money in the Bank. I don't know if we've seen a Money in the Bank cash in for a lower card title. I know we have in NXT, the breakout tournament contracts have been cashed in for the North American title, and Roxanne Perez decided to cash hers in for a tag title shot with Cora Jade once, which was really bizarre. So it's certainly in the realm of possibility that, you know, Priest cashes in on Gunther. Where they go with WrestleMania, though, I'm not sure at this point. Like, there is part of me that does like a Sammy Gunther, match. I know you and Zach were talking about it last week, and I don't think either one of you were super high on him dethroning Gunther. I'm a little higher on it, partly because of a huge Sammy guy, but I feel like where he was positioned last year. You know, he has fallen a little bit from grace, obviously, you know, not positioned with the bloodline and doing a whole bunch of different things this year. But I feel like if he could kind of maybe tap into the story he was telling last year, and he could, I mean, he's awesome on the mic, and kind of tell some story that's compelling to finally dethrone Gunther. I'd be cool with that too. But yeah, whatever match that they do wind up going with for Gunther at WrestleMania, I am hoping it's a singles. And if it's not a singles, I don't want to see Gunther lose the title. When he does lose it, I really just want to see it in a straight up wrestling match. That's the match that Gunther like should thrive in, considering, you know, ring general and all of that. So to see him lose in, you know, the match that he should be able to win, I think that should be the match type once that time comes around.
All right, Steve, anything else you want to bring up?
Last two things. Number one, I got to tell you guys, this experience that I'm getting where the man is coming out and I'm almost yawning over what she's got to say, and you kind of implied it earlier,
oh, no.
Wade. It's
yeah.
Maybe, I mean, I'm not just going to say her courses run out, because I hated the heel version of Becky with the sunglasses, which is dopey. But when she came out, her next to mommy, as it were, if you didn't know anything about who would have had the bigger resume, and clearly we know who does, you would have guessed the one with all the goth makeup was the one who's the future Hall of Famer, or at least guaranteed Hall of Famer, and the other one had been with the company less than 5 years or 6 years. But I just – something's got to be done to freshen her up with a little bit, because maybe just have her take a massive beatdown from Tiffany Stratton or something and just go from there. But, boy, I was like, wow, can she just shut up so Rhea can talk a little bit? I couldn't believe I saw myself saying that.
Nate, can you put your finger on what's going on with Becky and what's, you know, drawing comments even like Steve is saying here?
No, so I don't know if I can necessarily 100% put my finger on it, but I definitely feel it. You know, she doesn't feel nearly as important as she did at one point. I think, you know, I you pointed out earlier, you know, she was talking about, you know, kind of at one point, you know, going away, becoming a mother, and that's kind of been part of her story. That may organize her a little bit, and it's kind of a superhero light, as you think of some wrestlers in. So that could be part of it. But there's also the fact that she's done everything for the most part. I mean, you know, there's obviously a few things that I think she could do. You know, I don't think she's won a Rumble yet, and or has she? I don't know. But I'm sure there's still things that she hasn't done. But, you know, in terms of winning titles and she's constantly in the main event scene, I'm kind of just wondering if people are starting to tire of her in that particular role. It's almost one of those things where it might behoove them to like almost write her off TV for a couple months and then have her come back in, you know, some sort of a heroic fashion, you know, to a massive pop or something to try and reinvigorate her. But yeah, I definitely feel it. I said earlier tonight, just her reaction from the crowd, you know, when she was opposite Ripley, you know, the crowd was solidly behind Ripley, the heel. And, you know, you're hearing a lot of boos for Becky and, you know, kind of fleeting cheers in the background. So, yeah, there's definitely something there. And like I said, I can't quite put my finger on what it is either. But I think a lot of those, you know, the things that I outlined kind of play a part in it.
All right. Steve, anything else you want to bring up?
Only one last thing. And the one thing that I find challenging but also fun when I'm on hold is you hear what other people have to say and you feel like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. And what do you think? Just got to throw this out there. I do love the way they're playing the long game with McIntyre. I mean, when he came out there and sat down in that Indian position, and somebody, I don't know if anybody mentioned that yet, clearly that wasn't by accident. when he sat down like that, like a la Punk with the pipe bomb. And I thought it was great. Currently, he is the hardest working man on this. I mean, the word we use on the east side of Cleveland is schwitzing, right? Sweating. He was working, I mean, schwitzing in that Elimination Chamber match. And here he is working the mic, and they're taking the long game with this Punk thing because clearly it's not going to be within the next 3, 4, 5 months. But it's coming, and it's good to know that there is hopefully, from what I can see, some real thought going in some of the writing, probably no surprise. That isn't just like, where can we get a pop today or where can we pop a number this week? Maybe 5, 6, 7 months from now, that's how you should be looking at these writing scenarios.
All right. Good to hear from you again, Steve. I know it's been a while. Nate, do you want to respond to that at all before we move on?
The only thing that I want to say that we hadn't mentioned is I love all of the little details that Drew's doing as well. Like when he was they showed him entering the arena tonight, and as he's pulling his bag behind him, you could see the CM Punk graveyard shirt that he had made up, like just draped over the handle of his suitcase. You know, so just the little things like that he's doing to keep that alive. So I'm a big fan of what they're doing right now with them.
Paul, good comments, good topics. Yeah, you too. Good to hear from you again.
Take care.
All right, let's jump to an email or two or three here, and let's see. We'll go with JB first here. He says, JB from Detroit, I love Rhea and everything she is doing, but if I had one critique, it would be that she's a bit too over-reliant on the catchphrase, mommy is always on top. I swear that between her and the announcers, it was said 5 or 6 times tonight. So, yeah, she couldn't resist after being down under, making a reference to still always being on top. Nate, I mean, obviously there's, you know, a little, you know, it plays into her relationship with Dominic and what they were sort of implying with a wink and a nod for fun, and she stuck with it. The crowd's still reacting to it. Does it have a chance to seem too cliche or to come across, as JB called it, a crutch?
Maybe at some point, but I don't think that's now or even in the foreseeable future for me. I love it. I especially when she says it's usually in a good context. Sometimes, it does seem maybe a little cheesy or forced or whatever, but it's still getting a reaction from the crowd, and a solid one at that. So I think when we start to see that reaction start to fade, then, you know, maybe move on from that catchphrase. But for now, I say lean into it. I mean, you know, WWE's always been ones to, you know, to try and brand things, you know, from catchphrases to, you know, tag team names, wrestling names, you know, whatever. So yeah, if it's going to sell merch and it's going to pop people, I say lean into it.
All right. JB also brings up The Rock must be truly invested in WWE right now with the announcement that he'll be on the next 3 SmackDowns. His schedule must have significantly opened to make this possible. Yeah, I mean, the pushback of Rock, the perception being that Rock big-shotted the Cody Reigns match away from Cody, worked against him, and it hurt his brand with an audience that is very important to him. No matter how big a star and how rich and how many opportunities he has and how many places he could go and never step foot in WWE. I think it's genuinely important to him. And I think finding a way to look like he's not just showing up for a cup of coffee, but here to perform. And I do think he genuinely loves a live performance. It just is a different feeling when you have that whole live crowd cheering for you. And you're this rock star surrounded by fans, whether they're cheering or booing you and whether they're doing what you want them to, it's still a rush. And so I think he's enjoying that. And I also think he feels a level of responsibility as part of TKO now to make this work. And part of making it work is seeming like he is not all in, because no one believes he's going to be, you know, full-time guy. He's in his 50s. But for the WrestleMania journey and the story that's being told, don't be absentee. And so I think it's a combination of all of those things. Certainly it's nothing he's required to do or desperate to do. he's not showing up at all these things if he doesn't want to. He could certainly have negotiated his way out of making many appearances if he didn't want to. Nate, is this going to win some people over on sort of that meta sense of appreciating and respecting The Rock, if ultimately The Rock's goal is to win back the fans' cheers once, you know, we get past the resentment they felt for a short span of days that he took something from Cody?
I think so. I mean, at the end of the day, I can't see people hating The Rock like indefinitely or for a long period of time. You know, he's always been, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't say always, kind of sometimes a bit of a controversial figure, or polarizing, I guess a better word, for some people. But I mean, I he's so damn entertaining. I can't see him, you know, kind of getting that backlash from the crowd. You know, I think once everything with WrestleMania blows over, if he continues to be, you know, a mainstay on TV, you know, obviously not full time, but, you know, showing up from time to time, maybe as an authority figure, you know, they have already kind of teased, you know, that authority, power struggle between Triple H and The Rock. So, I mean, that's always something that they can go back to, if they need to have The Rock on, you know, an excuse to have The Rock on TV. But yeah, I think like once this whole angle with Cody and the bloodline starts to subside, I could even see like The Rock or either The Rock turning on the bloodline turning on The Rock, to potentially build to that Rock Roman match. Cause I think that's probably still going to happen. I feel like it's too big of a match to not go to, as long as The Rock's healthy and, you know, Roman's healthy and The Rock's schedule works and all of that. But yeah, I can't see The Rock being a real life heel, if you will, you know, for much, much longer.
All right. He says, has the New Day versus Imperium really been an incredible two-year rivalry? I feel as though the way their match was framed tonight was a bit of hyperbole. And this is kind of a broader topic too, Nate, about what WWE is doing on Raw and SmackDown post Kevin Dunn with more video packages. We're seeing some different camera angles. We're seeing the outside of arenas more. We're seeing the wrestlers approaching in the afternoon. And there's a lot of cool things I like about it. Are they going too heavy with video packages? Maybe it's not more than it used to be on average. Maybe that just, you know, a little bit here and there feels that way. But they do feel a little bit different than they did just, you know, last year. I don't know if, yeah, but I can't put my finger on it. But the New Day Imperium video package is an example of it, where they're putting like extra effort into setting the stage and trying to make a match feel really important beyond the normal promos and just the announcers hyping it. So talk specifically about New Day Imperium and that feud, but also about the video package tonight and the use of video packages lately and how you feel about them.
Yeah. So I was also one going, wow, has it really been 2 years that feud's been going? And for something that was supposed to be a 2 year blow off, I was like, why are we doing this on Raw? Why isn't this a 2 year blow off happening on, you know, I mean, maybe it's not WrestleMania worthy, but, you know, why didn't it happen on the last pay-per-view or the next pay-per-view after WrestleMania or something like that? I think we're probably still going to see this feud progress with the way that the match ended here. Yeah, you know, and I actually really like this match between the New Day and Imperium. It was something we don't see out of either team very often. We saw some real intensity out of the New Day, which they've been bringing out throughout the course of this feud, at least the last, I don't know, month or so. But we, you know, Imperium, you know, you think of them, you know, as in the ring, you know, the ring, you know, we get the ring general, but, you know, they're all, you know, mat wrestlers and things like that. So to kind of, to see them kind of branch out and, you know, use the arena as part of their canvas, if you will, I thought was really cool, kind of see them a little out of their, I'm going to say comfort zone, but, you know, probably their character's comfort zone. So yeah, I really liked the match. In terms of like the video packages and the production changes, I really have thought WWE needed some sort of a refresh for a while. Like, you know, and they would try things from time to time. Sometimes you had things that didn't stick, like the words all over the screen every time somebody was talking, you know, and, you know, they didn't work, but, you know, you had things that did. But the video packages, they are definitely a little different. I kind of like the way that they're doing it. Like you said, that they're trying to make things feel a little bit more important. I feel like a lot of times, in not to knock the, you know, Kevin Dunn era video packages, because, you know, I think they did a great job with those. But a lot of times they kind of just felt like, you know, a little bit of a recap of maybe what happened last week or the last couple of weeks, or even if it was a full recap of the feud. But it just feels, I don't know, more intense, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, but it does. It kind of gives them a bit more of a pomp and circumstance and a bit more of a big fight feel, as far as I'm concerned. One of the big I don't know if it's a big production change, but I love some of these new camera angles. One that they used, I think it was last week. They also used it this week. They're returning, and I think it was, I can't remember what match it was they used it tonight, but they returned from a commercial break, and then you have the cameraman in one, not a whole bunch of crazy different camera angles, just one fluid angle walking down the ramp and then kind of walking around the ring and watching the action. I think they might have even got up on the apron. I can't remember. But it was like a 20-25 second shot where you know, you weren't changing camera angles every 3 seconds. So, you know, just those small little innovations like that, I think are really cool, even down to the lighting. I really noticed tonight, and I don't think tonight's the first night they changed it, but for some reason it stood out to me tonight. Yeah, the crowd is kind of blacked out. You don't have the red lights, you know, beating down on people. I know I hated going to TV tapings because I knew I was going to have lights shining in my eyes. I'd much rather go to a house show. I like a lot of these production changes, even the, like, when Sammy was coming out tonight, and this isn't the first time they've done this, just the first example I can think of. When Sammy's coming out tonight, they cut to commercial before he finished his entrance, but then they had, you know, a bunch of Sammy graphics come up on the screen. They had Cody graphics come up the screen before he came out. I feel like it's just a nice refresh, even down to, and I wanted to try and figure out where to throw this in tonight, but even down to the WWE 2K24 ratings. Yeah. So I was listening to you and Zach talk about it last week, and I am a gamer. I have bought just about, if not every WWE game that's come out since probably Warzone in the 98. I really like the fact that they're kind of incorporating the ratings. And I understand for people that don't play the game, it's like, well, what does this rating mean? For people that do play the game, the rating, it's kind of like an overall, you take their overall stats, and it's kind of an average of their stats. So it's kind of cool to see how the rating affects like the wrestler in real life. Like Grayson Waller with the 74, like if I was to choose Grayson Waller in the game, I'd be like, okay, he's a 74. I'm going against, why can't I remember who he faced tonight? I don't remember who he faced tonight, but,
Waller.
Yeah.
Cody.
Thank you. Wow. Yeah. No. Main event.
It was the main event, but it also was so secondary by the time it was over. So.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, obviously Cody, I believe, was like a 90-something, 89, 90-something. So, if, you know, I was playing the game and I, you know, was to pick Grayson Waller, I know that I'm going to need to fight a little bit harder to defeat Cody Rhodes. So if you play the game, those ratings, I think, kind of are, at least for me, they were kind of cool. But I could definitely see, for somebody that isn't a gamer, doesn't play the 2K games, you're like, what do these ratings mean? Why are we doing this?
Right.
This is a weird tie-in.
And who's making the ratings? Like,
yeah.
It's just, and what is the context of how the numbers are created? Who are the experts that decide this? Why do wrestlers care if it's just some people sitting around going, I think this guy has more wins and is cooler? Like,
yeah.
You know, it's just, they're not really giving that context to the Raw viewer and SmackDown viewers, much less the video game people. It doesn't matter that much in the video game. I don't think anything's jumped out to me as like, crazy off. But there's a certain level of arbitrariness that comes without context.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. Like I said, overall, I really do. I like the production changes. As much hate as Kevin Dunn got, I mean, you know, he definitely had his, his strengths and things over the years. Got to give him credit where credit's due, but I really think the show needed a refresh production-wise. And it feels great right now. Down production, creative, all the stories are kind of intertwined. They're flowing together really nicely from segment to segment. There's never like a jarring moment or anything like that. Overall, I really like the production changes.
All right. JB says Chelsea Green does a great job at garnering genuine heat. She did such a good job tonight that it seemed like she actually got Raquel a pretty good reaction, even though I don't feel like Raquel has been particularly over since moving to the main roster. What do you think about the use of Chelsea Green, Nate, on the main roster?
I love Chelsea Green on the main roster. I was actually listening to her in an interview that she did with Chris Glenn Veet. I think it came out a couple weeks ago at this point. One of the things she says is she's not in this right now. She's not in it for her. She's in it, for the stories. If she's going to go out there and be out there for 30 seconds, she's going to give it the best 30 seconds she can, because that's what the company needs and that's what's going to tell the best story. I think they're utilizing her very well, down to the obnoxious, I say obnoxious, but I love the way that Samantha Irwin announces her, the over-the-top Chelsea Green announcement. She comes out super cocky and then just gets squashed. I think it's a pretty good use for her. She's a decent wrestler, but I definitely think there is a ceiling for her. And I think she might even... I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I mean, she might even know that. So the fact that, she figured out, she found her spot and she's comfortable in that spot and she's able to, put other people over in that spot, I think is a good thing. To JB's point, Raquel has felt less than on the main roster. I don't know, I know, she was struggling with and I can't remember the name of the disease that she had, that she has, that kind of took her off TV for a little bit, that causes like allergic reactions and skin rashes and things like that. So, I mean, I don't know if like that played into it where, she had to be off TV or whatever, but I know, she has felt a little less than on the main roster. Even just the change of her last name from Gonzalez to Rodriguez, I thought was a little strange and almost kind of defined her down a little bit during that jump from NXT to the main roster. So I think even Triple H slipped up and called her Raquel Gonzalez at a press conference after Elimination Chamber. So I don't know what that says, but I think that covers what JB said.
Yes. Good answer. It's would Chelsea have valuable if she were protected more, or do you think, given the totality of her skill set, that this is a good role for her and there's no shame in losing quickly but also getting mic time to agitate and get heat back, so to speak?
Yeah, I don't think there's any real issue with the kind of the role she's in now. I also don't think that there would have been any harm in building her up a little bit and giving her a little bit of credibility before getting to this spot. But I think she's enough of a heat magnet on the mic where she can kind of build some of that. I don't think she's, the people that they put her against, I don't think she's necessarily going to, make the next, Becky Lynch or next big star or anything like that. But, for somebody like Raquel Gonzalez, or somebody like, on that level, I think it's a good place for her.
All right. And finally, where's Cody going to have his match with The Rock, or will he have one at all? As always, love the show and go VIP. And we covered that enough already. We won't revisit that here, but we'll go to Matt from South Carolina. He says, it seems to me like Triple H's booking style is showing its face more and more each week. What do you think of the way he keeps having interesting interactions between wrestlers who also seem to be in another storyline with someone else? I think I'm liking it. It keeps things moving, gives something to look forward to, and most of all, it keeps you thinking. Thoughts. So I'm curious because, Nate, you've watched intently Triple H's Paul Levesque's booking in NXT for years. What do you see translating to Raw and SmackDown that seems different than Vince McMahon? Do you think Matt's onto something? Are there things he did in NXT he's not doing on Raw and SmackDown that's actually surprising you that he's either not doing or now is doing that he didn't do in NXT?
In terms of not doing, there's nothing that immediately jumps to my head, but I'll think about it. But no, I mean, I think that his booking style is all over the place as far as I'm concerned. He was still obviously under, when he was in charge of NXT, he was still under, Vince's thumb. I mean, there were still things that happened that Vince would kind of change his mind and, something that happened on the main roster and then they pull somebody from NXT. And I think there were even a couple times where, Vince just flat out said, no, you're not doing that at NXT. So, he didn't have complete carte blanche down there, but, he did have a great way of weaving people together and weaving stories together. And that's translating to the main roster big time. And I know I mentioned it earlier tonight, but, that's one of my favorite things in a wrestling story, and I know I've mentioned it before on the show, one of my favorite things back in the Attitude Era was a lot of those things where, you kind of like the main top guys and women on the show would be in multiple segments and whether it be in ring or backstage segments throughout the course of the show. And there was it was usually one or two stories that would kind of be weaved throughout the course of the show and everybody else were kind of side characters and whatever. But I always liked that because I always felt like it made the show feel a little bit more cohesive and, especially if they bookended the shows with that particular story. Now, everybody kind of seems to be a little bit intertwined. You're not really surprised if somebody walks past somebody backstage and, congratulates somebody or, form some sort of relationship with them. A really good example of that was, I think it was this last week on NXT, Thea Hale and Fallon Henley, both of them are faces. They just happened to be in the locker room at the same time, a little forlorn over completely different things. And they had this nice little heart-to-heart moment where Fallon Henley kind of was had this big sister moment, took Thea Hale under her wing, and they walked away kind of telling stories about why they're forlorn and upset. And I thought that was a great segment because they've never had any interaction before other than maybe tag team standing on the sidelines while the guy counterparts and their tag teams did their thing. But I thought it was a great little story that they told. And now kind of the two of them are, probably going to be together in NXT, a team or something. So I see a lot of that translating to the main roster. We've talked about it with, the Cody storyline, weaving between, Roman and Seth and Drew. And, so that's my favorite thing from Triple H's booking that's kind of spilt over to the main roster now, just how they weave everything together.
I will say to Matt, there's a chance that we're seeing a lot of weaving together just because of unforeseen circumstances, like the CM Punk injury and even Brock Lesnar in his situation. Where
that's very true.
Yeah, suddenly, we got to have Seth involved with Drew, but we need – because Cody was going to choose between Seth and Roman, that pulled Seth into a storyline more than he would have had Punk not been hurt. They might have been on separate planes. If Lesnar was around and he was going to take on Gunther and do the honors, as they say, for Gunther at WrestleMania, well, then we wouldn't be seeing all these wrestlers crossing paths with Gunther. But there is something to this beyond that. And it's a good thing that – it's a good point that Matt brings up because it does seem like Vince had everything very segmented. There was not what was the old Google's Google Plus? They had, you had your circles where like somebody might be a friend and a coworker, and so you'd have them in two circles and they'd overlap, and then like. Vince didn't want that. He wanted like you got this group of friends here, or these people are associating here, and then the people way over here with a wall between them. And Levesque has more mixing and overlapping, and sometimes it's foreshadowing, and other times it's just an adjustment on the fly, like I said with Punk. But I do think he's willing to trust the audience to keep track of the idea that wrestlers have more than one thing going on at a time. And I mean, Priest standing opposite of Gunther was not on, you know, my so-called bingo card for Raw tonight. You know, Rhea Ripley's been doing different things as a hometown hero, opposite of Nia, but also hanging out with Dom, who gets more booze than anyone. He's willing to put people in situations where based on context, they act differently. But as long as there's still a core, something at the core that drives their decisions, their actions, their attitude, I think it can work. And I think it makes for a more nuanced and layered show. I don't think you want everybody having multiple feuds and multiple things that they're dealing with, but I think he's balancing it well, and it feels different. And I think Matt's picking up on something.
And props to you for the obscure reference of the day with Google Plus there.
Yes. That was not on my bingo card for tonight's show either.
Yeah, me either.
Yep. Oh, Google Plus. I remember thinking that was going to be a thing.
Yeah, me too. I remember it came out. I was like clamoring for an invite.
Yeah. Yes. wow. Okay. So anything else from Raw, Nate, before we wrap up? We're past an hour and a half here.
No, nothing else that springs to mind anyway.
I'm going to bring something up. What do you think's going on with Sammy? And he gets a win over Nakamura. Nakamura's in a good role right now. I wrote in my report. He was kind of become a useful top of the second tier heel. He can give babyfaces a good fight. He loses to him. It gives the babyface a boost. He can come back strong because he's so good. He's got a good persona. They're doing those good vignettes. But what's going on with Sammy and the way he's just like, I need WrestleMania. I need wins. I need – is this just building up to a match with Gunther or a multi-person match, or does he get – or does he miss WrestleMania? That turns out to be a defining moment. And then he's had interactions with, you know, Cody saying, I got your back. So they're planting a seed, maybe a heel. Sammy is Sammy turns heel. He's a challenger for Cody. We talk about this plays into Matt's email, you know, where a wrestler has more things going on to keep track of at once. You can just imagine the storyboard for the characters at in the booking headquarters in Paul Levesque's head or on his computer spreadsheet or whatever, where there's a flow chart of, okay, he's here now, but he's saying things that are going to work once he gets here in 3 months.
Oh, just the thought of Triple H working with flow charts tickled me. yeah, you know, like my gut was originally, you know, Sammy somehow winds up opposite Gunther, but I'm not convinced that that's where they necessarily go. I actually kind of really like what you just said, though, where potentially he doesn't make it to WrestleMania. He tries. He doesn't get that WrestleMania match, and they tell a story after that, you know, and I know I've said redemption story tonight with Becky, but, you know, a bit of a redemption story with Sammy, where he kind of has to prove to himself that, and to the fans, that, you know, he's still the man that he was and that he's worthy of a, you know, a title run or something like that. Because when Sammy gets passionate, man, he gets passionate. And I feel like that could be a very compelling story. It's like I said, as far as like where I see them going, I'm still not 100% sure. Gun to my head, I'd have to say potentially, you know, Gunther, but like I said, I'm not 100% sold on that.
New Day and Kaiser and Vinci had a very good match tonight. We should just, you know, mention that. I know good wrestling is a plenty, and good wrestling alone doesn't draw money. You need to have stories. You need to have characters on journeys. You need to have consequences to finishes. You need to have finishes that count. Speaking of Paul Levesque, we've had some, you know, maybe higher ratio of that not happening lately. But they delivered. What do you think of New Day's attitude? And I wrote in my report at PWTorch.com that I like Vinci and Kaiser getting the win because they're over New Day. New Day's a legendary tag team, future Hall of Fame tag team. But Vinci and Kaiser were marginalized last year. They need to rebuild them. So they go out and have a killer match. Crowd's going nuts. They give them, you know, plenty of time. Crowd's chanting, this is awesome. And they get the win to rebuild them. So I think that's a positive. And it seems like New Day's kind of in a different place right now. They're more serious. They're not playing to kids. But they're also not protecting them, so to speak, where a year ago you would just have expected New Day to beat Kaiser and Vinci. Vinci were just sort of, you know, jobbers to the stars and, you know, Gunther's henchmen, but at a lower level than they are now. So those are some of my thoughts. Yours, Nate.
No, I agree with you. I mean, you know, Kaiser and Vinci, they definitely got defined down after coming up to the main roster. You know, down in NXT, you saw Imperium, you hear the Imperium music, and you're like, uh-oh, okay, some stuff's going down. But that didn't really translate to the main roster. And I don't think at first the idea of just, you know, three really, really good mat wrestlers, you know, excited the audience. Gunther was able to win people over with, you know, his title run and all, you know, his in-ring work. But Vinci and Kaiser, they needed to work a little harder to get there. I think it's smart. I think it's wise to have them go over tonight for a lot of the reasons that you said. I mean, New Day, like you said, future Hall of Fame tag team, they can suffer a couple losses and they're going to be fine. You know, they're still going to have their fan base. People are probably not even going to be thinking about the New Day losing this match, you know, next week or the week after, unless they keep bringing it up on TV, of course. You know, whereas, you know, Vinci and Kaiser, they really did need a couple and probably still do need a couple more high-profile wins to kind of not feel like Gunther's lackeys and feel more like equals. I don't know if they'll ever quite be equals, especially, and I hate to say it, but especially Vinci. That, you know, Kaiser's the guy that they've got more high hopes for you know, in terms of the two in that tag team. But I think that makes sense, you know, kind of to build them back up, get them to be a little bit more like equals with Gunther, you know, and then you know, potentially, you know, let them wreak havoc on the tag team division. Whether the Judgment Day is still in control of the titles or not at that point, but yeah, like and like I said earlier, I thought this match was great for a couple different reasons. You know, New Day's intensity, but also the fact that Imperium was just kind of out of their comfort zone. You know, you're not. They're not usually in some sort of a gimmick stipulation match. So to put them in a street fight where they're not in the ring, where they're, you know, kind of more comfortable and at home, I thought it was pretty cool. And then especially to see them win in that particular stipulation was, you know, it was cool for me as an Imperium fan, but also to, you know, to elevate them a little bit higher up the card.
Very good. Nate, I think that is all I have for you. Any closing words or anything else?
The only thing I can say is wish me luck. I'm moving tomorrow.
Oh God. did you get all your friends to help, did you contact friends you hadn't talked to in a while going, hey, good to talk to you.
Thankfully I have I've got a roommate who's helped me out. I got another friend that's helping me out. So, but yeah, got a long day ahead of me tomorrow.
Well, Nate, thanks for joining me tonight. Good discussion. Nice to have some NXT topics to augment everything, and it was good to have you on.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you very much, as always. Always a pleasure, Wade.
Thanks to our listeners. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. And don't forget, email wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com if you've got questions for tomorrow's flagship or questions anytime about anything for any of our shows. Until next time, Wade Keller signing off.